It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria Chaleos with you this morning. I'm joined by Sheridan Hansen and J.D. Gunnell from the USU Extension. We were talking about parsnips before the break, and we have a call from Mont in Bluffdale. And good morning, Mont. What was your question this morning?
Well, mine isn't a question. It's a comment. I've grown parsnips for 40 years. In the last few years, I've had a real problem getting them to germinate, so I saw a thing on the internet where I save all my toilet paper and paper towel tubes, and I stack them going vertical in a plastic tray and fill them with potting soil. And then I take a pencil and poke it down and put two seeds in each hole. And last year I had about 90% germination, and I've got a bumper crop still in the ground out there that I need to dig.
So you started them indoors?
I just put them in my garage, and when in the morning we put them out, and in the evening we bring them in so we could so they didn't freeze at night. But we just started them in front of our garage, you know, and let the sun get the tray warm. But parsnips are the most overlooked vegetable there is, and a lot of it's because of the way people cook them. We slice them long, put a little butter in there, bake them at 350, and then you can put a fork in, then you can eat them. But a lot of people boil them, and they're not good that way.
Yeah, they're definitely an overlooked vegetable. I'll totally agree with you on that. I think it's something that people could incorporate into their gardens to get a little more variety and try something new. Some people just don't love the taste of them. I happen to really like them. So I like the idea of starting them in this long tube. Essentially, you're starting them, I mean, even though you're starting them in your garage, that you're starting them indoors. They're not being placed right in the garden, right off the get-go, right in the soil that they're going to be in. But that long tube is key because this is a tap-rooted vegetable. And so we don't want to disturb that tap root. So where you said you're using like the toilet paper rolls to start in, you're giving yourself a much longer space to get them going in.
And blocking any wind so they don't dry out.
Right. So, I mean, it's a little more controlled environment. So great little tip there.
But, you know, we just dig a trench and set them in there, and the toilet paper tube rots. And
yep.
If I can get in the dirt today, I'm going to go dig some for tomorrow's dinner.
Yeah, and they're actually really good if you'll let them overwinter, like just what you're talking about. So they actually sweeten up quite a bit as opposed to picking them at the end of this end of the season.
I put bags of leaves over them so I know where they're at, and then I can go dig them.
Right, the soil doesn't freeze. So, yeah, great thing to do.
But it worked. I mean, it worked the best to germinate them. So a little bit more
That's
work,
great.
But better harvest.
All right.
That's
Mont,
great.
Thank you so much for your suggestions this morning. We also have Marlene who wanted to make a suggestion. She's been a master gardener for 20 years, and she says when we were talking about recommendations for trees, her favorite has been the tricolored beech. I love the tricolored
beech. They are beautiful.
I wish I could plant one in my yard. I just don't have the right space for it.
Yeah, because a lot of people assume that they're a small tree, but I've seen them get 40 feet.
Yeah, they get quite large.
And they have a nice pink variegation on the outside of the dark purple leaf, so they're really beautiful. You do have to have them in the right location, though, because in the hot July and August winds, that pink sometimes turns brown.
Yeah.
And some scorch. So.
And then they don't look quite as pretty.
No, you do need
so
a large
have a little
space,
bit of filtered
though.
Shade.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And that's why there's not one in my yard, sadly. Next person wants to know when to start onions outside specifically.
Okay, so if you're growing from seed, then you want to get your seeds started probably in February, get them started and going, and then you're going to transplant out into the garden. Onions are a cool season crop, so they can handle some cooler weather. So probably mid towards the end of March, you're going to put those out into your garden and get them going that way. Now, there's another way to grow, and that's from sets. And that's been my most successful way of growing is from sets. So you just order the sets or pick them up at your local nursery. Somebody's done the seed starting for you, and they've let those grow into kind of like a green onion that you would get at the grocery store. And then they pull them up.
Yeah. Bulbs.
Little tiny bulbs. They pull them up, cut the tops off, and let them dry out just a little bit. And then you can pick those up and put those right into the ground. And those I tend to put out in April. So it kind of depends on how you start them. You know, if you're going to go from sets or if you're going to go from seed.
Sheridan, how much space do you have in your garden?
Well, it's not really my garden. It's the university.
Okay. Because I'm like, oh my gosh, yeah. You planned everything. You have a lot of space.
Well, I grew as an organic grower for several years, and we grew on an acre, but it was intensive. So we would space things really close so we could get as much as we could out of that area. But here at the Botanical Center, the USU Botanical Center, I grow in several different gardens. So I grow an edible demonstration garden, and then we have an urban farm demonstration garden. And that one we grow intensively. So there's a lot of succession planting and planting tightly and vertical trellising to see how much we can grow in a very small space. So there's a lot of plant material that goes into that one.
And Sheridan's very humble. She won't tell you, but this is one of the coolest gardens in the Wasatch Front.
Oh, thank you, JD.
It's actually, she's taken a quarter acre because that's a lot of the size of normal homes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's actually an eighth. So it's like a backyard.
Oh, yeah. So it's even smaller. But she produces more in that eighth of an acre than I do on my whole acreage at my house. So
okay,
it is intensive, but it gives really great ideas of how close things can get and still produce. And she's doing research and writing fact sheets all the time. She's like the Energizer Bunny. It wears me out.
I love it.
I don't know.
Sheridan, everybody wants to see now what you're growing and wants to know more about the Botanical Center. So tell us about that. I mean, with COVID, can people still visit?
Absolutely. So our grounds have remained open throughout the entire pandemic. You can come up and you can visit. We're open from dawn to dusk is when we recommend that you come. So the gardens right now are not in full production, obviously, because we're in the middle of the winter. But we start planting in March and April, and we'll start getting some of those cool season crops in. The best time to come and see some of the vegetable production gardens is July, August. That's the best time to come and see it because it's full production. You can see the tomatoes completely trellis. They'll be 5 to 6 feet tall up these string trellises. It's an interesting thing to look at, kind of fun, different way to view tomatoes and different crops that we're growing.
But JD, you were saying people could come and see out the trees now, though.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. And I was just going to say, too, she also has high tunnels.
We do.
Little greenhouses where she's starting things early. And I think I saw a post this last week where you guys are going to have strawberries in a few weeks.
Yeah. So we have a hydroponic aquaponic section, and that's where the strawberries are growing. It's in a tunnel. And so that gives us some season extension, and we can control the environment, the air temperature a little bit better. So we have strawberries coming on quite early, which is exciting. And then we do have a high tunnel in the urban farm demonstration garden area, but we're going to be growing cut flowers in that this year. So one of the crops that we grow in that urban farm area is cut flowers, because a lot of the times if you're trying to grow for like a market situation, you want to have a high value crop. So that's what the cut flowers are. They're a very high value crop that is the full season, and you can make a lot of extra money on those. So we're going to dedicate that high tunnel to cut flowers this year.
Okay, you lead me to the next listener question, which is starting hydroponics in their home. They want to do something really small that they could possibly do with their children. Any suggestions for them?
Yeah, so there's a couple of different systems that you can run. Probably the most simple system that you can run is called the Kratky method, so you'll want to look that up. It's basically just a water bath that has all of the nutrition that a plant needs applied into the water, and then you float... you just float like a piece of foam on top, and you put the plants in these little holes that you've cut out in the foam. It's a really simple, easy way to get things going. And you can germinate the plants right in that situation. You don't have to start them and then transplant them over. Another method that you can use, and this is my I'm not the biggest fan of the hydroponics because it takes a lot of time and effort.
Well, you know, you hear my silence.
JD was like, I'm not answering this. But the other method that I actually really like is called the Dutch bucket method. And that's where we've got something like perlite in a bucket. You put the plants down in the perlite, and then we have to have watering on timers. It's a little bit more complicated. And so we can, we'll water every so often, every so many hours, with a water that has nutrients applied into the water to give the plants what they need. That one seems to work really well and be very successful. It's very successful.
So what was the first one again before?
The Kratky method, K-R-A-T-Y, I believe is how you say it, or K-R-A-T-R-Y, Krat, nope, no Krat. R, Kratky. I can't even spell it.
Okay.
Kratky.
All right,
that one's really simple, really easy. If you want to do it with your kids, you can do it smaller scale. You don't have to do it on the scale that we've done it here at the USU Botanical Center. But we got a grant for it, and we wanted to see what we could do with it, you know, how successful it was. It does cost quite a bit to get started. You're going to put some of your financial resources into starting this, but it is a fun thing to do with kids for sure.
I was just going to say that we have a professor on campus, Bruce Bugby.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Like Dr. Amazing when it comes to this kind of stuff. He actually grows things and researches for NASA.
NASA, yeah.
Oh, wow.
And so he knows a lot of the controlled growing environments. And he said one time when I was trying to learn more about hydroponics, he said that it's a double-edged sword. Because the good thing about hydroponics is you control everything.
Yeah.
The
bad
nutrients,
thing.
The air, everything they get. But the bad thing is you have to control everything.
Yeah, it's a lot more work on your end. I mean, and in Utah, if you have a place to grow outside, we have great soil. We have incredible access to light. Our light in the summer is awesome. So, I mean, you kind of have to weigh the advantages and disadvantages. I mean, you can grow outside with a lot less effort than you can inside on the hydroponics. But if you don't have space, then hydroponics might be the answer for you.
Yeah. And, you know, Utah, we have four seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as I want to garden right now, I'm really tired of winter and I want to get my fingers dirty again. By the end of October, I'm ready to hibernate.
Yeah. So, we need a break, too.
So I need a break from gardening just like the earth does.
Yes.
All right. We need to take a break. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us your questions at 57500.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria with you today, along with Sheridan Hansen and J.D. Gunnell. Taking your calls and questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us, 57500. We were talking about hydroponics before the break. One of our texters says, the Netherlands is the world leader in hydroponics. They have tomato plants 10 feet tall, and they don't divulge their trade secrets. Apparently, they tried to get a tour there, and they were not allowed to get a tour. They weren't able to get a tour, at least.
So I actually spent some time in Holland and speak Dutch. Mm-hmm. So I love the Netherlands. And
don't love hydroponics.
I did not say that. I think it, but I didn't say it. But we were actually able to tour some greenhouses as university faculty about, it's been 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And we went with Larry Sagers. And we toured some of those greenhouses, and they let us in because we're university research. And
yeah.
We, there's trade secrets, and there's a reason. They do an awesome job.
Yeah, I actually just watched a documentary on it. It was really interesting. If you watch the documentary Europe from Above, there's a section in the Netherlands that they talk about the hydroponic systems that they run there and how much food they can produce in these hydroponic situations. And it's incredible how much lettuce they can produce. The tomatoes are really interesting because they'll string trellis those, and then they'll actually, as the tomatoes produce, they produce towards the top of the plant, and they'll lay the strings down so that the tomatoes start to kind of wind back and forth, and they'll strip the leaves. It's really interesting to learn about.
They're very good engineers when it comes to plants.
They're very good engineers with a lot of things is what I've been learning. So yeah, really impressive.
Yeah, the new hydroponic machines have been kind of gaining in popularity. They kind of go in and out, and they seem to be hot on the market right now. I'm betting that our texter was really talking more on a smaller scale than the larger scale that you're talking about. Have you had any experience with those smaller machines? Or I'm not sure what to call them, but...
I really haven't used one of the smaller, you know, like the little tabletop ones. I haven't tried one yet. I probably should try one.
I just got one for Christmas that I'm experimenting for you, but I don't have a lot
of experience. How's it working for you?
So the great thing about hydroponics is that the plants show up really quickly. Right? So, but they don't all do well. So right now I have some a red lettuce and some basil and some dill growing and some things that I can't remember which seeds I use that haven't come up. So I'm kind of waiting on those. But they do grow very quickly. I tried this a few years back, and my problem with it is that I don't get enough, and then our growing season is here, and I'm like, why didn't I just do this outside? sort of kind of what you were talking about, but it gives me, you know, I love to see things grow, and so I'm enjoying watching them grow, and then I'll have to give you more information as the season goes on. A lot of times they get overgrown, though, too, and it's hard to...
Yeah.
You can't get a lot. I mean, so if you have a family, it's hard with those tabletops to really feed a family with, you know...
No, I think it's more therapy than it is food.
Well, and it's just kind of fun to do something unique like that. And, you know, especially if you've got little kids and you're trying to teach them some principles about science or you just want to experiment with something, I think it's really a fun experience for them. It's a fun experience for
me,
too.
Keyword is therapy, and I'm sure that's why my son bought it for me for Christmas. She can't get outside. She needs some therapy. I'm going to buy this.
She needs some therapy.
And I do. No, I love watching them, so.
Yeah, it is. It is really interesting. I think with those tabletop ones, like the crops that you mentioned, they're shorter season crops, so they come up quickly, they produce quickly, and I think that's kind of key with a lot of the hydroponics that are grown in homes is shorter season, faster turnover, and you know you can get some really good production on a little bit larger scale than the tabletop, so you could be pretty productive.
And maybe that's why I don't like hydroponics because you. It's mostly leafy greens.
It's a lot of leafy greens, yeah.
Can't grow hamburgers and bacon.
Yeah, bacon doesn't do so well.
It's the greenhouse show, JD. So one of your good friends, Mark Van Wagener, just wants to know whether you mentioned the local seed companies like Mountain Valley Seeds, Trueleaf.
Yes.
Awesome local seeds here in Salt Lake.
And they're the ones that supply the local nurseries. They do an amazing job. And so if you look at the back side of that packet, it's Mountain Valley Seed.
Yep.
Almost always.
Yep. And you know, when you go to, when you go to those local nurseries, that's what you're going to find. And hi, Mark, I would love to say hi to him. So thanks for the tip there.
He says he's enjoying listening to the two of you. Next person says they put in an entirely new landscape this past summer and fall, and they're worried about the watering of bushes and trees. And what is your best advice? They have just a ton of things that they've planted in their yard.
So my advice is don't worry. The ground is really forgiving when it comes to water. And in my experience, what I see is new landscapes get overwatered rather than underwatered. So, you know, small perennials, they'll use about a gallon of water per week. Shrubs, between 2 to 5 gallons. Trees, 5 to 10 gallons. And that's during the hottest part of the summer. You can probably cut that in half during the spring and fall. Mm-hmm. So when you're doing drip irrigation or emitters, it's all based on the size of the emitter, how much water they're putting out. But typically, people overwater. So don't overthink it too much.
Right. And right now in the middle of winter, I mean, you really don't need to be thinking too much about that water. You know, but people are concerned because it is dry.
Yeah. But again, that soil can hold on to that. That's the job of the soil is to hold nutrients and water. And so if you have a healthy, good soil, then it makes up for a lot of mistakes. We've been talking about hydroponics. And again, that's the hard part for me is you have to control everything that goes in, the nutrients, the water, the air, whereas the natural system has that all available. You just kind of get in the way sometimes.
All right. We're sometimes really good at that.
We need to take a break for the top of the hour news. We'll be back with more on the KSL Greenhouse Show. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500.
I'm Dave Cawley. investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.